anomaly, something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
All the cool kids keep enthusiasm rationed, right down to the last explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced. Perhaps I do not strike you as a geek without the horn-rimmed glasses and knee-high Argyle socks. But nerdery is more than wardrobe deep, and I'm a nerd down in my heart, and that's where nerdhood rocks. I'm better acquainted than a good girl ought to be with Aragorn and Yosef Bridge and Worf and Hal and Han. But you don't really know me, and my culture don't control me, so don't you pigeonhole me, cause my phaser's set to stun. Oh, I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
You are listening to a special Anomaly Week interview hosted by Jen from Anomaly. But if I am a
Hi, my name is Myrrh Lafferty, and in my martial arts class, they call me the Mighty Mighty Myrrh Doll with Geek Fu Action Grip, and I am an Anomaly.
Hello and welcome to Anomaly. I'm Jen, and with me today is our special guest, Myrrh Lafferty. She's a writer, podcaster, an editor, and a geek.
Yay, geek!
And you're also a martial artist, which I think rocks. I, too, am a martial artist, but I think you probably could beat me up.
Oh, I seriously doubt it. I'm nursing a bump on my knuckle from a rather nasty Arnis stick whap yesterday, and I feel like such a wuss because I keep going, my knuckle hurts right here, right here. It's a big bruise. It hurts. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on this call. So you're a very busy lady.
Oh, well, yeah. A lot of plates to spin, a lot of balls in the air, all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I know you're busy, so I won't keep you long. We just recorded a roundtable discussion about this topic with the co-hosts of Anomaly, and we have expanded a little bit of the questions based on that conversation, so I may get into those. But for the icebreaker question, if you had superhuman powers, which would you possess, and would you use them for good or for evil?
How many do I get?
As many as you want.
As many as I want. Okay, because most of the superheroes, like if you can fly but you don't have any sort of strength, then you know you're just this flying jerk who can't help anybody because you've got low, bad upper body strength like I do. Mm-hmm. Flying's definitely in there. Gosh, there's just so many. You know, I'm always interested in elemental control. Mm-hmm. Whether it be control or actually turning into element stuff. I'm a huge fan of the Avatar series and love the whole mythology of the benders, the water benders and the air benders and everything. So let's go for elemental control with the knowledge that as a airbender, I'd probably be able to fly.
Would you use them for good or for evil? Depends on the day.
Well, you know, everybody would automatically say good, but I'm trying to be honest here. Yeah, I'd use them for good. Okay. Well, you asked. I had to consider the options. Well, trying to be fair here.
I understand. I'm a mom, and sometimes I wish I could use my force lightning on some people.
Mm-hmm. Cone of silence would be nice.
These are not the droids you're looking for. Do you have any real life heroes?
I have writer heroes for their styles. Connie Willis is my hero. Neil Gaiman's my hero. A lot of the women who have made strides in feminism, and in particular in science fiction and fantasy, you know, James Tiptree, she took a lot of, you know, she had to hide behind that name so well that nobody knew it was her. And, you know, I don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason why I don't have to do that is because she did. And, you know, people like that who go through, who went through a whole bunch more crap than I have to and made things a lot easier for my life.
Do you have any fantasy heroes? Like anyone you looked up to as a kid?
When Robin McKinley wrote The Hero and the Crown, was the first fantasy story I read where the hero was a girl who had to fight dragons. And it was like, you know, finally a story about someone like me. And I'm not trying to identify with all the boys, with all the girls in the stories who are waiting to be rescued and are very pretty. And I'd say Aaron from The Hero and the Crown would be my first fantasy hero, just because she was so awesome. I read The Wizard Children of Finn. excuse me, I think that's out of print now because I wanted to get a copy for my daughter. And the main character in that was... It was about two kids going back in time to hang out with Finn McCool in Ireland. And the girl, I was so excited there was a girl and a boy, and the girl was just a complete wuss. And she was actually known as the blind because at one point in the story, she just could not bear to look at what was going on. And so she hid her eyes. And so, you know, I was just very disappointed in that.
And along those lines, which sci-fi television show or movie do you believe treats women with the most respect?
Battlestar Galactica comes to mind.
The new one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I would say Battlestar Galactica because when President Roslin was appointed president, the people who were against her, no one brought up her sex. They brought up her position. I mean, there's like, you're really going to give this to a school teacher? You know, the fact that she was a woman never entered into it. The fact that it was like post-apocalyptic wartime didn't enter into it.
Mm-hmm.
They were mad that she was a school teacher. Yeah, that's the one that leaps to mind because it, you know, it felt like Star Wars in the early, the horrible, horrible prequels. It felt like they tried to make some women Jedi, but it was like a sort of, that was definitely, let's throw in a token here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you've got lots of women as spear carriers and you've got lots of women in power, that's when you know that someone actually pays attention, that there's another side. There's another 50% of the population that you're leaving out. So, yeah, Battlestar Galactica is the one that leaps to mind, yeah.
Well, what about fantasy movies or television?
Gosh. It's really hard to say because so much fantasy tries to be like medieval and copy the medieval prejudices. You asked for television, so Game of Thrones comes to mind, but I'm reading the series right now. I'm behind all the other cool nerds. Mm-hmm. And I'm just amazed at the fact that if you're not a named woman in that story, you're going to be raped.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, these women in this village, they were all raped, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, really? Really? All of them? Those are busy soldiers, you know? Let's take away the whole horrific part of it. That is busy.
Yeah.
That is a lot of work to do. So I can't be horrified by it every time I read it because I just get overwhelmed. And so I'm just going to the just complete irrational, what are you doing? But then you go to the named characters. And whether you're talking about the totally evil Cersei or the very kick-ass daughter Arya, the characters are very, all the female characters are very well drawn.
Mm-hmm.
And even though their world is not a good representation of how women should be treated, they are shown to have to step up when things get tough. I mean, even Sansa is starting to do it. I just finished the second book. And again, I know you're talking about TV, but I can say mm-hmm. that because the TV show is pretty well mirroring the book. So. Mm-hmm. And even Cersei, I mean, she's got a speech in the second book about how, you know, my brother got accolades and I got sold like a horse to be, you know, ridden when someone wanted and beaten when someone wanted and to bear foals when someone wanted. And even she figured out a way to move within her limitations of the, that the society put on her. And of course she went completely evil, but still she's an interesting character because of that.
Yeah. We got into a conversation about that on our round table and I was in the camp of, you know, that I wasn't real sure because you're right. Those characters you mentioned with the names are awesome. But then it's like there's this juxtaposition, you know, between the women being raped against the pile of dead bodies. Mm-hmm. And every time you turn around, there's a rape. And the sword of truth is the same way. And I had to stop reading it because it was just like, it's too much. It was too mm-hmm. much. It was like, why? What's the point? I get it. These worlds are bad for women to live in, but do you have to write them, you know, every detail of a rape scene, every single chapter of the book? I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't make it very far in the Sword of Truth series, but I'm on the same. I mean, I just finished the second novel in the Game of Thrones. So, yeah, I hear you on that. I'm kind of divided on my opinion of that series. Yeah. I really should probably read more before I draw, you know, any opinions, but it's hard.
You should check out my Goodreads review of it, because the Clash of Kings, because it's, okay, Brienne is really ugly, and women get raped a lot. We get it. And then I went on with the real review. But seriously, it's like, and then I was laughing because I started the Storm of Swords last night. Second paragraph of chapter one talks about how ugly Brienne is. Seriously, man, he cannot get over the fact that he made an ugly woman knight. Wow. We get it. She's not attractive. Let's move on.
That's funny. You're a gamer. Is there any game that you've played that doesn't objectify women? I make the assumption that you play RPGs, but maybe you don't. Maybe you like Pac-Man or something like that.
No, I love RPGs. The thing about RPGs, and the thing I play the most is Dragon Age. Is that they? You could choose, even if a character, like in Dragon Age, there's a mage. Her name is Morrigan, and she's got a rather sexy and illogical robe. She's a mage when you first meet her. It's kind of like if she turned right or left, her breasts would just fall out because mm-hmm. it looks like she's just wearing a scarf over her shoulders that just drape over her breasts, and so I hate that. And then, but you know, I can take that off and put something realistic on her because their choices of armor and other things you can wear are so diverse. And most of the other clothes you can put on your character are more realistic depictions of what you would wear. Armor and even the mage robes are fully covering. And in the Dragon Age series, that is medieval. And yet you've got women playing, women knights and bards. And there is one race of people who, you know, if you choose to make your main character a woman, they give some, what, women do this in your world? But that's like, that's the extent of it. That's all. And everything else is, you know, the women do this too. And so I would say a lot of stuff from BioWare. BioWare does a lot of good stuff for women and gays because they make a lot of gay-friendly relationship paths because there are some people who will have same-sex relationships with you in these stories. Mm-hmm. And I would say, and I'm only just into Mass Effect, but mm-hmm. again, you can choose to have a male or female main character, and everyone treats you the same. World of Warcraft is pretty okay, except for the visual depictions. If it's not your character that you actually put reasonable stuff on, the people you come up against try to look a little naughty. And actually, there are desire demons in Dragon Age who are large with big horns on their heads and they're naked with little tassels. So, you know, there's that. But overall, for actual human women or elfin or dwarven, it's a good depiction.
Awesome. Yeah, I play Oblivion. I think that's a pretty good game as far as, you know, the way the women are clothed and stuff. So, and you can shape them any way you want. So that's awesome. I love that.
Yes.
Let's see. We kind of got on the subject of fantasy literature, but I'm expecting you to say that you think that George R. R. Martin has a good understanding of how to write female characters.
Characters, yes. Overall, sex of women, not really.
Do you have any other authors you think do a good job at that? Depicting women and...
Yeah, it's funny. There are a lot. And of course, the minute you ask me, my mind goes blank. Well, who have I been reading? Oh, God. Tobias Bakel. Somebody was talking at a con one time about how, like, when people start writing female heroes, they're starting to make them, like, these magical, badass, amazing warriors. And it's like, okay... And they're all very young. And someone's like, okay, where's me a story where the protagonist is a 50-year-old mother?
Yeah.
And Toby said, oh, okay. And then he wrote The Executioness, which is a fantasy tale about a woman with who lives in a hovel with her father, who's an executioner, and her two sons. And she's a butcher by trade. And her father dies and sort of... through deep plot details I won't go into, but he forces her to take up the axe. And through the plot, she becomes this extremely reluctant war hero. And it's also a story about how what people think about you is often more powerful than what you think you are. And in this case, it would be people think that she's an amazing war leader. And she's like, okay, I'm not, but I have to step up because these people need to be led. And it's a, just a very powerful story with this amazing middle-aged mother who's just forced to take... I mean, she's got... she's a butcher, so she's got, like, big... She's got good upper body strength to wield the axe, but she doesn't have any skill. And she's just forced into this position and... She makes of it what she can. And it's just a very, it's an awesome story. I love it. I really wish it had gotten some award nods because he totally deserved that. I highly recommend it. It started out as Audible and as an Audible novella. And you can, the narrator is amazing. I can't remember her name, but she really really packs a punch to the story. And then Subterranean released it via the, novella, hardcover. So I would say, definitely say Tobias Bakel. Let's see. As I mentioned before, I'm a huge fan of Connie Willis, and I really like how she makes her, most of her protagonists are female scientists, which is usually quite a nice change. Yeah, I'll go with Toby Bakel and Connie Willis.
Those sound very interesting. I mean, I haven't read a lot of fantasy, but I kind of got on a Robert Jordan kick.
Uh-huh.
And I really like the women in those books, but I need to expand.
Yes.
Branch out. Let's see. Which authors do you believe totally fail to do this, and what are they doing wrong?
Oh, man.
We got on a Stephanie Meyer's kick.
Oh.
Roundtable and how she totally sucks at writing female characters.
I have not read Twilight. I read Wikipedia stuff on Twilight enough to know that I'm trying not to judge it completely based off of hearsay, but I did read some plot synopses. I'm sorry, I just hit the mic. Based on some plot synopses, and I'm thinking, wow, this is... It reminds me of a relationship I had in college that was not good. And that's what scares me the most, is that I can totally see the codependency and the emotional abuse and the complete flat character waiting for other things to happen to her instead of actively doing anything. It's funny, I haven't read a whole lot because I usually stop reading once I realize that the story is a sausage fest or the women are cardboard. there's a lot of golden sci-fi that has, you know, they built the foundation and they created amazing stories and amazing concepts, and yet they were not forward-thinking enough to think that perhaps the sexes would be a little bit more equal in the future. And so when I read spacefaring stories with only men, I get kind of pissed off. I hate to say this, but I was recently reading, and I understand this gets better, but I started reading the graphic novel Chew, which is a rather gruesome story about a man who, if he takes a bite of food, he knows everything about that food. So he's obviously a vegetarian, but still he knows like where the oranges were grown and where the what herbicides were used and who picked it and all that stuff. But he's also a rather gruesome detective because he can bite a murder victim and learn about who killed them. So it's a disgusting cannibalistic story, but it is fascinating. It's very well written, and yet for the first two books there was one female character who was not poorly drawn. There was a woman who there was a love interest, and then there was this woman who was almost grotesquely hourglass shaped, who was also like supposedly a master of 5 martial arts and an amazing assassin. And of course, a man bursts into her apartment, punches her in the face, and knocks her out a window, and she dies. And I'm sorry for that spoiler, but I'm sitting here going, all right, she's a master martial artist in 5 disciplines. Really? So, and I just, I was really torn because it's a fascinating story. It really is. I mean, the concepts behind it, because there are more people with abilities involving food and tasting than just our character. And those are less gruesome. Let me just tell you that. But I hear that it takes, there's like one police officer she's there to be a character. She's not there to be fallen in love with. She's not there to have sex. She's not there to make you want sex. She's just a character in the world. I'm like, wow, he's acknowledged that there are women that you may not need to have sex with or be a mother or be a love interest. Wow. So I hear it gets better. I've only read the first 2 graphic novels. I'm sticking with it because the concept is so amazing, but the whole, you know, where the women complaint is pretty strong with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about your own characters? You're an author and you've written quite a few. I just finished Marco and the Red Granny, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, thank you. That's one of my favorites.
Did that graphic novel inspire you at all? Because you had a nice blend of senses where you could wear a novel or, let's see, I can't think of another example, but you go ahead and explain it so that my listeners will understand.
Well, actually, no, I just read Chew in the past couple of months, mm-hmm. and I've had the idea for Marco since, well, actually the inauguration of President Obama, because I heard about a fashion designer who woke up the day after the inauguration and suddenly he was a superstar because Michelle Obama had worn one of his dresses. And I thought, wow, it's that whole, who are you wearing? And I thought, you know, I'm a writer. I get all sad for myself every once in a while. And I'm like, that will never happen to the art that I create. No one will ever shout out to Michelle Obama and go, mm-hmm. who are you reading? And she'll hold up my novel. And I'm like, well, what if my novel were a dress? Well, how the hell could that happen? And so I created these alien species who have 7 senses. And they have the technology to project senses and experiences into art. And so what they do is they create this create an artist colony on the moon, and they start offering patronages to everybody who creates art. And by art, I mean sculptors, painters, musicians, choreographers, pastry chefs, anybody who creates something that instills passion within the human mindset gets taken to this lunar colony to create. And then they take perhaps this one short story and this cake, and when you eat the cake, you have the experience of reading the short story. Or otherwise, you could read the short story and have the taste of the cake in your mouth. But they love human passion. And one thing that humans get passionate about, not that I'm proud of this, but it's reality television and blood sports. And so because they rule on the moon, it's not like a human-ruled colony, there is a fight to the death, gladiator-type battle. And the reigning champion is a 80-year-old woman who takes full advantage of the 1/6 gravity. And that's the Red Granny. And it's funny you bring up Marco and the Red Granny, because that was one of my first... It's the first story since I ever felt confident as a writer, I think, where I had a fully male protagonist. The story's about Marco because I wanted the Red Granny to be a little bit of a mystery. And so I was writing a male point of view.
You did a good job with that.
Oh, thank you.
As often as we complain sometimes about men not being able to write women, there are some women who can't write men. But
oh, yeah.
I thought you did a good job.
Thank you.
I know I'm getting very close to the 30-minute mark. Do you have time to continue talking, or do we need to wrap up?
I could talk a little bit more.
Okay. What other projects do you have coming down the pike? I've heard you on I Should Be Writing talking about something that you're working on. I don't know if it's super secret or if you've disclosed any information about that.
Well, I am the managing editor to Angry Robots World Builder, which is a project we are doing to around the book Empire State by Adam Christopher, which will be out in January. And it is probably the first fully supported and encouraged fan community surrounding a book. Whereas we are, I'm approaching pro creators to write or create is the key term here, a work about this novel. And we're going to put that on a website, and then we're going to open it up to the fans. And whatever the fans want to do, they can do and upload to the website. And then we're going to be choosing some of the best stuff and putting it in an anthology. And we're going to be doing 4 anthologies throughout the next calendar year about this project. And it's very exciting, and the Angry Robot fans are already getting excited about it. And, you know, the book's not even out yet. And so I'm managing that. And I have a Flash project coming on. I'm almost done with it. It is based on They Might Be Giants' Fingertips songs. They did back in, 1992, they released Apollo 18, which is an album that took advantage of the shuffle feature. And yes, 20 years later, it seems all funny and quaint. But you know, when you would hit shuffle, you can still do shuffle on the MP3 player. But they wanted the full-length songs to be have a full-length song and then have a tiny little snippet of a song. Tiny. Like, it's a song that lasts 20 seconds or a song that lasts 15 seconds. I think the longest maybe is a minute. And it's a fun thing, but I think they've acknowledged that most people listen to albums all the way through, and so they treat it like one song now in concerts, and they start singing these, like, I think it's 22 different songs, one after the other. And all those songs would make interesting story titles. And so I am doing the Fingertips Project, which is a one flash piece written for every song of the Fingertips line of little bits of songs. And I'm almost done with that, and that'll be out shortly on via ebook.
That sounds cool. I think we're about the same age. I graduated in 93, and I don't remember that, probably because I was a hick and didn't listen to them. So I'm going to have to look them up and listen to it. So thanks so much, Murph, for joining us. I really appreciate your time. I know you're really busy, and it's been an honor to have you on, and I hope we can have you back one day when you're, you know, trying to publicize your next exploit.
No, Jen, it was so much fun talking to you. I'm really glad to be on the show. Thank you.
In Art 4, Dequan's dance groove swept the country. And suddenly old moon boots were Italian haute couture. Time magazine reported that our time had finally come. I guess they didn't know that we already ran the world.
I'll Still Be a Geek was courtesy of Marion Call. You can find out more about Marion a little later this week. We'll be interviewing her. Or you can go straight to MarionCall.com. Thank you, Marion. Keep your eye on the Anomaly feed for another interview in 2 days. In the meantime, visit AnomalyPodcast.com. That's AnomalyPodcast.com for contact information and more. Thank you very much for listening.
We start Anomaly out on every episode where we change the intro every time. Where, for instance, one time I said, I'm Jen. I once wore a Han Shot first shirt to a gun show, and I am an anomaly. And
Right. Yeah. I remember you telling me about this.
Yeah. So if you can say I'm Mer Lafferty, and then you can like stick your geeky exploit in.
No, I can do it. I got one.
Okay. And as a tip, we used to fumble a lot on the "I am an anomaly" part.
I see it. Yeah.
So we had to like really slow that part down and enunciate each word, and it became easier to say. So
okay, but I am an anomaly. Okay, I am an anomaly. Yeah, you got to go an anomaly.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for the warning, because that would have been nasty.
Alliteration's not good.
Yes.
All right. Do you want to try one?
Sure.
Okay.
My name is Mer Lafferty, and my marsh pad. See, now you messed me up at the beginning. Okay. Hi, my name is Mer Lafferty, and in my martial arts class, they call me the Mighty Mighty Mer Doll with Geek Fu Action Grip, and I am an anomaly.
Thanks a lot, Mer.
Sure.
I'm so happy to be able to interview you. I'm a fan of your show.
I've been listening since
Geek Fu Action Grip.
Oh, yay!
Yeah. Back in the day, I was listening to your show. It was a pleasure to have you on.
It was really great talking to you, and I wore your t-shirt in martial arts class yesterday.
Awesome!
I did.
I'm glad you liked it.
Thank you. So,
well, I hope you have a good evening, and thank you so much for your time.
Oh, sure, Jen. It was fun.
I'll see you on the internet.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye. Listen. I know how you feel. I've been there. You feel like you had a dream to write. Once. There were stories in your head that were unparalleled and so much better than the stuff you bought in bookstores. You would be an author. You would show them all. But maybe along the way, you got discouraged. Maybe you bowed to the demands of life, family, career. Maybe you just thought you wouldn't be good enough or that it was too late. But I'm here to tell you, you should be writing. At 5 years old, I Should Be Writing is one of the first writing podcasts. Author Mer Lafferty speaks to wannabe writers on the issues of keeping going from the beginning early stages of writing to keeping professional in the later stages of building a career. I speak weekly to professional authors about their work, their process, and advice that they have for you. There really is nothing stopping you. No, not that. Not that either. Nope. Whatever you're thinking of, it can't stop you. Trust me. Listen to I Should Be Writing at ishouldbewriting.com and learn more. Twice weekly and free, ishouldbewriting.com, because you should be writing. But I should be writing. I should be
on my craft. I should be right.
And the wah-wah pedals on the ground.
This is where we're gonna have the music. The bounce music. Which hopefully we will either find or Jim will provide for us. Can you type porn music into iTunes and see what happens?
I'm not typing porn into anything.
I'll do it.
I'm Jen.
And I'm Angela.
And we're the socially functional co-hosts of Anomaly,
the podcast with a unique perspective, a female perspective on all things geek.
Star Trek.
Star Wars.
Lord of the Rings.
Buffy.
Firefly.
Gaming.
Books.
Costuming.
And general geek topics. The sometimes monthly,
but always entertaining,
Anomaly Podcast.
AnomalyPodcast.com.
Hello there, my name is Meds and I'm one of the co-hosts of a podcast called Waffle On. And we talk about classic television programs and films from around the world. So hopefully we'll be talking about something you'll like. And quite clearly you have good taste because you're listening to the Anomaly Podcast. So if you fancy coming over to our show and listening to us waffle on, then go to iTunes and type in Waffle On Podcast or go to our main website, which is waffleon.podbean.com. We would be honoured if you'd join us.